Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for May 16th. Gosh, is it May already? Is it May 16th? I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. How's it going, buddy? I'm lost in time here.
Okay, and I'm lost in space, so then we've got the perfect continuum here.
Well, then we can join the Rakuten Golden Eagles in their bullpen, because they're lost.
Wow.
In fact, I'm thinking I'm going to apply. I'm going to apply for a reliever with the Rakuten Eagles. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't do any worse than the guys they have right now.
No, I beg to differ.
Look, I can top out at 80 miles an hour, and I can throw strikes, and that's about what they're doing.
I want to see that. I want to see that first.
I want a 10-day contract. Give me a 10-day.
Man, you'd be lucky you get 10 seconds.
Hashtag
high heat.
That with all due respect.
All right. Well, I'm just thinking I couldn't do any worse, because I wouldn't prevent them from losing games. That's for sure.
Well, that's the other side of that, yeah. Certainly it doesn't matter how many runs you allow in zero innings if you're going to lose anyway. But you see, that's after the fact. Before the fact, they don't know how bad those guys are going to be. Whereas with you, I could almost guess it wouldn't be a success.
All right.
Is that mean?
No, let's make the show a success.
Okay, let's focus on the things we are familiar with.
All right, on this week's show, we've got an interview with Brad Eldred of the Carp. We're going to talk about the Carp, and we've got our first Power Track spot with MPB tracker Patrick Newman, and much more, and listener questions.
Wow.
So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so I went out to talk to Brad Eldred of the Carp, and this was, way back about 10 days ago. It was on May 5th. They were playing the Giants at Tokyo Dome. This is probably Brad's fourth appearance on the show, and that includes a post-climax series loss to the Giants. I think that was 2013. He's having a great season, a great ball-crushing start to the year. He's very productive in his four-plus seasons here with the Carp. He's got close to 100 home runs in his career, and I'll assume he'll reach the century mark in that department in the next week or so, the way he's been hitting. maybe 10 days. But anyway, 350, almost 350, I think 364 after games were finished today, 12 homers, 26 RBIs, and he's still listed among infielders with the Carp, but he rarely plays at first base. He's mostly out in left field. And we spoke for a while before he actually sat down for the interview. And we were talking about injuries, because I asked him, how he was feeling. And he told me basically he had a bone spur like I do.
Okay.
But he also told Wayne Grosick, our buddy Wayne Grosick, that he had a plantar fascia problem.
Okay.
And so I guess he's got a bunch of things going on with his body, legs, and we see him limping all over the place. But luckily, those things are—I say luckily because when I had my bone spur, I thought my Achilles was going to pop, and so I was very afraid to move around. But once you realize it's just a bone spur and it's not an injury, it's a condition, then you're able to deal with it. So he takes a lot of prep before games to get ready for games. And he actually said he wasn't going to have time to talk to me, but then he said, you know what, I can spare 5 minutes. And so we sat down and had a very speedy, quick talking chat. So let's take a listen. We're speaking with Brad Eldred of the Hiroshima Carp this week. Thanks a lot for taking the time. We appreciate it.
All right, no problem.
All right, now, you knew when you came into this season that you weren't going to have Kenta Maeda on the staff, but how have you seen the team respond?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, we even lost Osera there in spring, so that was kind of a tough blow. But, the guys have responded pretty well. The pitchers have, done their job. Guys have stepped in. I think the hitters have been doing a really good job of trying to alleviate some of the pressure on them, putting up some pretty good runs from time to time. So, it's been going good so far.
Now, many of the statistics last year said that you guys should have won the Central League title and you didn't even make the playoffs.
Right.
How do you approach this season coming off of that season?
Yeah, I think last year when you look at the numbers, is one of those years. I think the first month we led the league in hitting and we're last in pitching. Next month, first in pitching, last in hitting. So it was just kind of one of those years. Just like things weren't clicking together at the same time. But you know, this is a new year. You know, we got a lot of good guys, a lot of good players. The young players are really starting to come into their own. So I mean, I think you know, we're definitely a team to contend with going for the title.
Well, more than that, I picked you guys to win the Central League title, so I'm expecting more than contending.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, of course, we as a team, we expect to win it, too. You know, we got to have that confidence in us, and I think the guys definitely have the confidence that we can do it. You know, there's obviously expectations by the fans and everybody else, because we have some good players, but for sure, the team, that's the mindset. We got to go out there and go for the title.
All right, now your manager is also in his second season, and he was a rookie last year. A lot of fingers were pointed at him for the reason that you guys didn't make the playoffs. What's the difference between this year and last year with him?
No, I mean, I think he's good. I mean, this is his first year doing it. You know, there's a lot of things out of his control, like I said, like just, you know, the team wasn't clicking together at the right time. You know, we had the players in place. We just didn't do a good job. We had some bad spurts of games, like 9-10 games in a row where we really played poorly, which kind of really sets you back. But this year's a fresh year. I think everybody's got a little bit more experience. And I think even for him, I'm sure it's going to help him out going about the game and being able to make the moves and getting to know and knowing his players, what he wants to do with them. So I think it really helps overall everybody.
Do you think the manager has a great impact on what happens on the field every day?
Yeah, I think they definitely can, for sure. You know, their job, they manage the players. You know, we have quite a few young players that it's, you know, he has a hard time getting them to line up all the time, but he does a really good job of getting them in, keeping them in there when they're hot. And also, like, we have some older players as well, and so he's trying to manage them because it is a long season. I think he's done a great job so far of doing that, keeping players fresh.
All right, now you guys have had some success early on the offensive side, and you just spoke about it a little bit about putting up more runs. What's been the change there?
Overall, I feel like the guys are being more patient. Myself, I feel definitely more patient. Our hitting approach as a team is a lot better. A lot overall, getting guys on base. Not so much trying to do everything yourself when you're in the batter's box. It's you're just getting on base, trying to get the next guy the chance to drive you in. And we've really, I think, stepped up our game when it comes to being patient and hitting good pitches.
What is Ishii's impact, I guess, on that?
Yeah, he's really focused on that. He's always big. I mean, he's always telling me, he's like, you know, be patient. So he does a good job. I think before the game, we talk around the cage, the batting cage, and he always has a lot of good insight on what the pitcher's going to try to do. And he lets guys know every day and keeps reminding them of approach, what kind of approach to have for the day's pitcher.
Now, I know he's off the team right now, and he's got a bad hamstring as well, but Hector Luna has really brought a different presence to the lineup. Can you explain what he's done, he's done that?
Yeah, for sure. He's a guy, you know, he can hit for average. He can fly out a hit. So, I mean, you got him in the middle of the lineup, he's going to get on base, and he does a real good job of getting in position. And also, I mean, he can drive the ball, so if the guys are on in front of him, he can drive them in. And he also puts himself in a position to give guys another chance to drive him in. So, you know, just being on base a lot, it really helps the team.
Now, the CL was all bunched together last year. Everybody pretty much from top to bottom was stuck together. I'm just assuming that you guys are going to be among the top teams or at least have a chance to go to the playoffs. So looking at that, you play the long season, you've really got to do it again in the postseason.
Right.
So how important is it to beat the Giants? You guys right now head-to-head are not doing that well against them.
Yeah, I think they're the one team we play a little bit poorly against to start the season. But, I mean, like you said, it's a long year. You know, we have the team. We have the players in place. You know, they've had our number the first month, but, you know, this is we're getting started up here with the second, I guess, third, really, month. So, you know, we're looking forward to playing these guys. I think we have the team that's going to be up there. You know, I think the league will be bunched together a little bit. I mean, we have a lot of good teams in the league. So it's just a matter of, you know, getting those close wins, I think. You have these close wins, you got to get the victory, you know, and that's what I think will make the difference on who's going to be on top.
All right, stay healthy, buddy. We appreciate your time very much.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, so thank you very much, Brad.
Yeah, thanks, Guy.
And like I said, we didn't really have a whole lot of time. We weren't really able to go deep into conversation about the carp, but what did you see below the surface of our chat?
Well, I think, you know, his offense was not down that much last year. It was one of the things I looked at when I examined the carp for this year and was thinking about questions. So one of them was, you know, where did they decline? Where didn't they go that we expected them? And the offense was horrible, but it wasn't him. I mean, once he became healthy, he was fine. It was more the time he missed at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But rather it was Maru and Kikuchi. you know, whose bats kind of disappeared. Now I've been wanting to talk to Takuro Ishii, the new, the hitting coach, about that, but I haven't really had a chance. I was really glad you asked him. And I guess the other thing is I was thinking this actually before I listened to the interview.
Uh-huh.
And then when I listened to it, I'm thinking more patient. Wow. And then as soon as he said that, I'm thinking, actually, he said more patient. And then you said Ishii. And I remember Ishii in his heyday with the Taiyo Whales and the Yokohama Bay Stars. And this lineup sounds like he's been coaching them, because as a player, Ishii was a guy who didn't have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the leadoff hitter. He batted in front of all the Bay Stars big bats, but he would still draw 60 to 70 walks a year.
Right. You know,
this was in an era when every announcer attributed the number of walks to the pitcher's fear of giving up a home run to him. So it was a complete, you know, they couldn't explain Ishii, because here's a guy who was basically a 75% base stealer and who stole a lot of bases.
Mm-hmm.
And they were walking him in front of the team's best hitters because they were afraid of, you know, the 6 or 7 home runs he'd hit a year.
Doesn't make sense.
Nope, doesn't make sense at all. But now when I'm thinking about the Carp, and he said patience, and Ishii's name just flashed in front of my eyes, and then you said Ishii, so I'm going, wow.
We're together, man.
Yeah, we're together in spirit.
Yeah, we don't want to share a brain like the Dragons front office brass and all those people, but yeah, we are together. We're on the same plane sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I thought about Ishii, and I heard announcers talking about it earlier in the season, and I've been trying to pay attention to it, but sometimes, and I know it's so difficult to do, and you only have a split second to make decisions on pitches, whether you're going to swing or not, but the game the night before I went out, it was a Wednesday, it was May 4th, and they were not patient at all early in that game. I think they ended up winning the game and getting some hits late, but they looked really bad swinging at pitches they had no business swinging at, and it just really didn't look like it was going to be good. Yeah, they ended up winning that game 6-1. But they looked bad early on, and I thought, oh my goodness. And that's actually when I decided to ask him about Ishii, because I don't think Brad has a lot of one-on-ones with Ishii, you know, trying to tell him what to do. But I think he obviously sees the rewards and the work that the other guys are doing
right
ahead of him and behind him paying off in the Japanese batters and their approaches changing. Mm-hmm. And plus, I'm sure they had some meetings. He goes to the meetings. They talk about the hitting approach that they want to have as a team. But when you see Brad hit, you know, you can tell he's getting paid to hit the ball hard.
Right. I think it goes down not necessarily to the walks, but an approach. And I think the key word there is approach.
Mm-hmm.
A better approach, as in better techniques for finding better pitches to hit.
Or, just the patience part.
Yeah.
I mean, he stressed that, and, you know, don't go out of the strike zone, don't chase, don't help your opponents. Don't, you know, as much as you can focus in or narrow in on strikes and try to go for those. And
although, interestingly enough, of course, when we had Michael Westbay's contribution the other day, he picked the Carp, the Giants, and the Bay Stars as the three teams with the fewest pitches per at-bat. So I think it's not necessarily, for example, patience in drawing walks, but again, patience in looking for your pitch. And if it comes early, go get it.
Right, exactly. Try to attack pitches in the strike zone and lay off the ones that are either borderline or out of the strike zone, and that helps. But my big takeaway from this chat, and like I said, it was really short. We didn't really get deep into it, so there's actually not a lot of really good meaty stuff to talk about. But I thought the reason I asked the question about beating the Giants is something I always ask, and it's always a topic for the Carp getting past this team. And again, they're struggling. They're only 2-6 against the Giants this year. They're pretty much okay against other teams, obviously. Nobody's running away with anything in the Central League, and he did comment that he believes it's going to be another close race like it was last year, which is something I believe. But you can't be four games in the hole against the Giants already off the bat like this. I think that's a bad sign for them. Of course, as he mentioned, you know, you've got Kenta Maeda gone to the States. You had Osetta with the injury early on, Daichi Osetta with the injury early on. Some guys are not pitching as they expected. You had the rookies who were pitching well in preseason, but haven't really replicated that in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And still, I think they're doing okay.
I think they are doing okay. I think a lot of the issues that they had to deal with have been addressed to some degree. I like what he said about, you know, Ogata using the different players in the lineup. I think that's fairly interesting, and I think a fairly accurate explanation of some of his choices in left and right field. So I like that.
And third base, and third base. Yeah, they're obviously the Hector Luna injury has caused some of that. I know they would probably he would be a late game defensive replacement situation where you'd have to get somebody in there. Well, they probably would tend to get someone in there if they have a lead or if the games are out of hand or whatever the case may be. If if he gets on and they want to pinch run for him and put a better defensive player in later. But the bat is, you know, is undeniable, and Brad said that, and you know, we understand that he's a different dynamic to that lineup, and so some of these young players are getting the opportunity because of his injury. And perhaps when he gets back, they won't get as much. You know, the guys like Kokubo, who hit a home run the other day at Nagoya Dome. So, you know, it's obviously he described the team as being patient at the plate, but I think the manager is being patient too in playing some of these young guys and getting them out there. Seiya Suzuki is one guy I would like to point to. Obviously, I was talking to, I think it's somebody. I think as a Carp fan, and picked Suzuki to be the breakout player of the year for the Carp. And I thought, well, you know, that's a good enough pick. They have the spots open. He can obviously get some playing time.
He was one of my, you know, when we did my little minor leaguers to look for section, he was one of those guys last year.
Yeah. You were anticipating he was going to break out last year.
Yeah, him and Asama and... There's another guy, Yoshikawa, I think, who's with the Tigers, who looks like he's about to break out. So,
burst onto the scene. Well, in terms of the Carp as a whole, I think the injury to Hiroki Kuroda recently, what did he have, neck and shoulder issues, and they deactivated him. Obviously, that's an issue. I did ask around that day about Osetta. I even asked Brad, and he said he hadn't heard anything, but we also talked about the fact that he's began some light throwing, but I haven't really heard that much after that either.
Well, we heard when Yoshinori Sato of the Swallows was out for 3 years, and about the second year we heard, oh, he threw 155, you know, kilometers per hour today, but you know, he never appeared on the first team, and he was you know, he's now on the developmental roster, so you know, he's throwing is good.
It's
not really meaning. It's fairly meaningless, other than it means his arm is mobile.
Right. So they continue to get quality starts, though. I was looking at their number of quality starts. They did a good job, I thought, over the weekend with guys we don't really know a lot about. Takaya Toda on Friday in a game they won against Junichi, and he put in a quality start, and they beat the Dragons, and then. Okada threw a good game on Saturday, and then Kyohei Nakamura, lefty, a guy who I think he had one win. He's got one win in his career, and he was excellent on Sunday in putting in a quality start, but that ended up in a 3-3 tie. They're squeezing a lot out of the guys they're putting out there on the mound.
Alan Curry, one run, six innings or so. So, yeah.
Had a really good start. So they're getting, and then the bullpen, it seems like it's straightening out a little bit. We'll get to it later with the problems with pitching, or I'll mention it later in the show. But Takeru Imamura, and I commented about that on Twitter the other day. I thought he was pitching better. What I meant by that is he's learning how and when to go out of the strike zone to get swings and misses.
Okay.
Because he used to just try to overpower people, and he just doesn't have that kind of stuff. And they sit on pitches and bang him. But he seems to be at least the few appearances that I've seen recently. Let me quantify that. The appearances I've seen recently, he's not just pounding the strike zone with his mediocre stuff. He's actually trying to get guys to chase, which is good. Hirotaka Egusa, one of my, another guy I like to pick on.
Why is that?
So he's not a guy, he's not one of my favorite guys. I haven't seen anything from him.
Okay, Hirotaka, no Christmas card from John this year.
Yeah, nothing I thought that was going to get guys out. He just happens to get guys to hit the ball at people or something. I don't know, but they've gotten some decent work out of him. Brandon Higgins, I haven't seen that much of him. He hasn't pitched a whole heck of a lot, but he hasn't been giving up base runners left and right when I've seen him. And then Shota Nakazaki, the closer, is getting it done.
Yeah, enough.
He's not shut down. So I think they're putting the pieces together. Mm-hmm. They're obviously, they had a really good run there earlier, late April, early May. They kind of flattened out a little bit and been 500 since then. But I like what they're doing. I like, you look at, it's pretty much easy to look at the guys at the top of the lineup and say, okay, the reason they're doing so well is because of Yosuke. Kikuchi's hitting 326. Brad is at, like I said, 364. Yoshihiro Maru at 293 with, he's got 29 RBIs to lead the team. You wouldn't think that he's the team leader in RBIs, but he is at the moment. And then, again, guys like Ryuhei Matsuyama, one of my favorite Carpies, and Takahiro Arai. All those guys are really popping the ball and getting on base, and I think it's a combination of all that that's basically able to cover up some of the shortcomings on the mound and some problems with the defense. I think, they look like they're going to be a sustainable contender.
Well, I think, offense tends to be more stable. And another thing is that, I think that was, of course, part of the issue. As I mentioned, I'm sure I mentioned last year, Kosuke Tanaka said, I asked if, if there was pressure on them as the favorites to win the Central League, and with Kuroda back, and he went like, he rolled his eyes, said like, are you kidding? It was like, we're crushing, we're dying, we're killing ourselves. So I think having the offense back, and it's sort of like, again, as we said a few weeks ago, it's sort of like they just sort of picked up and they took a little step forward from where they were 2 years ago. Which is what we expected him to do last year.
Last year, yeah. Where were you? All right. Well, thanks again, Brad. We appreciate the time. Even though you didn't have that much, it was a good interview, and thank you very much, and look forward to the next time. Now, I'm glad to bring back Patrick Newman, the MPB tracker, for his first Power Track spot. I wanted to do it a little bit earlier. He had a trip to Japan during which I wasn't able to meet up with him. Did you actually get to see him?
Are you kidding me?
No,
Patrick's a hermit. He tells everybody he's coming to Japan, and then he blows us all off. So it's like, that's like, yeah, thanks, Patrick. I I'm joking, and we love you, and I've gotten so much help from you in the past, and you really make the show. So I'm just giving you some guff.
Okay, yeah, we all wanted to buy you dinner, buddy. So next time you come back, dinner's on us. How's that?
Us.
And with that, we present Power Tracks. All right, for the first time this season, it's my pleasure to welcome back Patrick Newman, the MPB tracker, for our power rating spot called Power Tracks. Great to have you back on the show, buddy.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed you during your recent trip to Japan. I don't know what happened. You dodged me.
I dodged everyone. It was a really busy trip with family activities, but hopefully next time.
All right. Well, it's been a very busy first 6 weeks. Are you going to do the first 6 weeks of the season?
I wasn't too scientific about it. I just kind of looked at where my gut was and where everybody's been so far. So,
all right. Well, it's been
a pretty
busy 30 plus games for everyone. So tell me what you've noticed.
Yeah, I think the biggest impression that I have is it looks like Hiroshima's lineup is fully healthy and performing up to expectations. The whole first five or six guys in that lineup is really doing really well. And those guys have left the biggest impression, I would say.
Really? I'm thinking, with Hector Luna's hamstring injury, and he'll be back, and at some point that's going to push somebody out of the lineup or to a different spot in the lineup. And then you know, our show guest this week is Brad Eldred, and I'm sure you haven't, I know you haven't heard it, obviously, and he's got some problems. So I wouldn't say they're fully healthy, but I know they're very, very productive at the moment.
Well, they're hot. Yeah. Well, I mean, I look at last year and you look at 2014 and the way guys like Kikuchi, Eldred, Maru, those three guys in particular performed in 2014 and the way they all dropped off in 2015. And now all three of them are back and that lineup's just been on fire. And maybe I'm a little bit biased because I saw them twice at Jingu a couple of weeks ago and they just absolutely smothered the Swallows in both games that we saw.
And right after that, they went home and battered the Dragons around. Yes. Yeah. They were really hot that stretch right there. But I just think they're good. I'm not going to say that they're particularly hot. I'm going to say they're good.
Well, they're good and they're doing what I thought they might do last year. So we'll see how the pitching holds up without Maeda and without Osera for the whole year. But they've left the biggest impression so far. Another impression this year is nice to see Ohtani hitting like he is.
Our buddy.
our fantasy buddy. So, you know, I think I'll never miss a chance to talk about how great I think he is. Yeah, just amazing the way that guy continues to hit and continues to pitch, and it's really a pleasure to get to watch a guy like that.
Yeah, I know I mentioned the fact that he hasn't, you know, I think it was on Twitter that he has only won one game, but he has been in a lot of games and probably could have come away with three wins. But, you know, wins aren't the be-all, end-all. I just use them to gauge how well a guy is doing in particular, because winning is important. But the fact that he hasn't been able to get some victories in some games where they didn't score, where he had one bad inning, I'm not going to hold that too much against him since he's got so many strikeouts and is pitching fairly well.
You know, I got to say, I'm a sucker for wins. I love it when pitchers pile up gaudy win numbers. I think it's really impressive. And, you know, it's not a sabermetric friendly kind of stat to accumulate because it's outside of the pitcher's control for a large degree. So, I'm a sucker for it. One guy who is winning on that team is Arihara, and he's a guy who I really liked in college. So it's nice to see him, performing well also.
Yes. And I wasn't impressed with him last year. I didn't feel like I was looking at the top rookie last year, but, he looks like he's gained some weight and some power and he's got better control and it looks like he knows what he's doing out there. The game that he pitched last night was fantastic at Tokyo Dome to beat the Buffaloes. And not that that's saying a lot because the Buffaloes don't often produce, but they'll have some games. They'll come up on you and have a good game here and there. But, yeah, he does look pretty sharp. I'm actually more impressed with him this year than I was with him last year.
And so the last impression that I have is Rakuten's lineup. And Rakuten is a team for me that has a bunch of guys who make contact but don't have any power and don't walk all that much. Although Okajima has really developed some good batting eye plate patience. So those guys all seem to be having one of their up years where there's a lot of guys getting on base and a lot of guys hitting for average. Unfortunately, they don't have any power like that a couple years ago with Jones and McGee. And the pitching isn't there, so they're still languishing, but it's nice to see that team, generating a little excitement, even though they're in last place.
Yeah. A couple of things that you said there, the power, they thought they were going to have some power with Johnny Gomes and now he's Johnny Gons, as in Gons back home and never to return. And then the pitching, yeah, I actually think that, and we've seen it a lot, their starting pitching has been really good. It's just that their bullpen has been a dumpster fire, you know, on wheels. Literally, it's been terrible. And I think at one point, Nishida, the skipper, was trying to overuse Mikolajo because he was just coming back off of an injury. And I think it was the third consecutive day that he used Mikolajo, and Mikolajo blew a hold chance late in the game. And as we spoke about on the most recent JBW, Yuki Matsui hasn't been the guy we saw last year. He's just missing with his control.
He got completely lit up a couple times.
Well, he's just missing with his control. It's just a little bit erratic, and that's not good for a guy like that. He needs to be a guy who can establish the fastball and then use his breaking pitches off of that. But he's been missing so much with the fastball that people are sitting on the secondary stuff and hitting that too. So it's not good.
One other guy in Rakuten that I want to give a shout out to is Kamata, the young pitcher. And I remember a couple of years ago when Tanaka left to join the Yankees, I identified Kamata as a guy who is part of the solution to that that hole being left. And what happens is he goes out and blows up his elbow and needs Tommy John, but now he's back and he's having a good year so far. So I always like it when guys come back and guys live up to the expectations. So it's been nice to see him return to action as well.
Yeah, they're leading the Pacific League with 25 quality starts. So I don't think we can say that their starting pitching has I think it's gone above my expectations, you know, with Manabu Miba, who's a, we're taping this on Wednesday afternoon, so he's going to be the starter on Wednesday for the Eagles, and you know, guys like that and Shiomi, and they're getting very good production. So Kamata as well. I didn't expect all those guys to come through, but you know, it's only 30 plus games, so let's not get too excited.
Yeah, it's still early in the season, and usually when I do these power rankings, I look for real bright spots and look for real star performances. And for the bottom half, I look at weak spots and, you know, which teams just aren't performing at all. And the nice thing about this season is that I was able to find a few bright spots for every team except Oryx. So
you promised me you weren't going to make me laugh really hard.
Oh, you know, I can't help myself. Maybe right, they'll trade for Nautice.
Right. So let's review. In review, everyone's got bright spots, and except for the Oryx Buffaloes. All right. Well, what are you seeing with them in particular?
You know, I haven't really watched them this year, so I can't comment too much.
What are you seeing with the numbers?
They're horrible. I think they have the worst run differential in the league. They're losing close games. They're losing blowouts. They just haven't been competitive yet. And they do have some talent. You know, they have Dixon. They have Nishi. They have Kaneko. I really like their shortstop Adachi. And Tony Blanco is another favorite when his body is cooperating.
Right, which, you know, he had a really scorching line drive on Tuesday night, but Brandon Laird caught it.
That's the one right to Laird, yeah.
Right, so thanks very much for playing. We'll see you. There's some lovely parting gifts for you at the door.
So, yeah, so, but those bright spots are a little bit dimmer than probably most of the rest of the league at the moment.
Right.
So in terms of the rankings, I have Hiroshima first, I have SoftBank second, and I have Lotte third.
Wow, you got the Carpies on top of the Softies.
I got the Carpies, and I'll tell you why. So Kudo is, I've just got this pet peeve with the Hawks and with the first and second guy in their order. They got Fukuda hitting first most of the time, and they have Imamiya hitting second. And it's, to me, it's just blindingly obvious to have either Hasegawa and Nakamura. Having those two guys hit first or second in any order. And then you have guys on base, actually, when the big bats come up, when you have Yanagita and Uchikawa and Matsuda coming up. Instead, you have those guys behind the core three batters, and you have these two guys that can't get on base leading off. It just makes no sense. So that's why I have him second. So it's Kudo's fault.
Okay, so that's a pet peeve. So the fact that they're, well, I don't know when we're counting this, but they're winning all these games. They're 724 winning average. You think you can screw it up? I don't think there's a way to screw that lineup up. I'm sorry. I don't think you can. And the fact that he's winning despite screwing it up proves it, I think. But I don't know. I can't put, personally, I would have to say the hottest team right now is the Hawks, but that's right now. They had a very bad start. I think the Carp have been more consistent throughout the season. They've had maybe a couple pockets of losses, but they haven't been awful for a long stretch. So I would have to put the Hawks above the Carp, but it's your power rankings. You know, I don't want to encroach.
Yeah. So that's my rationale, and you can criticize the lack of scientificness to it, but
never. I would never do that. You are the scientist. I am the layman who watches with awe.
I will leave it to others to criticize that and send the feedback on Twitter.
Okay.
And then I had Lotte third and Nippon Am fourth. Lotte, you know, I was not on your Pacific League preview show this year, but if I was, I would have told you how much I love the addition of Jason Standridge. And I am sure right about that so far.
Yes.
And I think they have another similar team kind of to Rakuten, with the number of guys who make contact and, you know, don't walk a lot and don't strike out a lot. But the difference is they got a couple guys who can hit the ball out of the park, notably Despaigne. And so Wakui is sort of a revitalized man in my eyes. I thought he was really, you know, a zombie his last couple of years for Cebu, and he's kind of worked his way back to relevance, and got to give him credit for that. And you know, Kakunaka is a good contact hitter, and they're just playing really good ball. And this is a team last year that just did not go away despite all the injuries they had. And I think they'll make it interesting the whole year.
Right. Okay.
Nippon Ham, I have them fourth based on mostly the star power of Ohtani and Arihara, and to a lesser extent Nakata, and but really those two guys. Those I'm just a fan of those two guys, so I have them fourth. They're winning ball games, and I really like Yo as well. They're winning ball games, and I think they're going to have another good year. I don't think they have enough to catch SoftBank, but they have enough to give them some trouble.
Okay.
Yeah. So the end, I'm going to put Yomiuri in 11th, just because they've had a really uninspiring couple of weeks. The lineup, the batting lineup is slumping. They've got a few good pitchers. It was kind of between Rakuten, DeNA, and Yomiuri for that second to last spot for me. And, you know, I just can't keep doing it to the Bay Stars. They're finally getting some good pitching, but the bats aren't there. And I think the bats will come around, and I'm just a little less optimistic about the Giants bats. Rakuten we just talked about. So, yeah, they're not winning, but they're keeping games close, and they're getting some good offense, and they're getting some good pitching from some of their guys, and they've been some fun to watch. And so I put them both ahead of Yomiuri, even though Yomiuri's got a better record at this point. And then I have Oryx in dead last, and don't know if I see them getting out of the cellar this year. I think they got a tough road ahead of them.
Okay, well, yeah, we've enjoyed the road through Power Tracks, and we appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Well, that was worth dinner.
Yeah, that was cool. I like him. I like Patrick's outlook on things. Obviously, we're in MPB this year. I think we're seeing a lot of mediocrity in the bullpens. And while we didn't get a chance to talk about that stuff, and he just, you know, he picked the Carp over the Hawks. And
well, that's for that's now.
Well, that was then. I mean, we spoke on Wednesday, and I think they were still pretty much hot. I think they're flattening out, but I still like the Hawks. I think.
Well, they lost two games in a row on Friday and Saturday for the first time in like a month.
Yeah, the Hawks are the Hawks. We know they're talented. So, yeah, again, he gave the Carp the top nod, and I'm just looking at, there's a lot of bullpen frustration going on. Teams unable to hold slim leads. You look at the Hawks, they have the best team whip in MPB, and they're getting, opponents are hitting 260 when they put the ball.
Yeah, their defense is just catching everything. I mean, there's nobody in Japan that can stand up to them in that respect.
And so I'm looking around, and, you know, we did talk about some pitching, and we talked about the Lotte Marines bullpen last week. But then, like I said, I want to try out for the Eagles bullpen. Even a 10-day contract would be nice for me, because they were just awful. The whole lot of them were awful. And
I thought it was just because you liked that color.
Yeah, I like the color, but I don't think I want to wear it right now.
Whoa.
It's looking a little bloody.
Wow.
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I remember you talking about Nashida and him being, you know, taking over the first year with a new team. He usually finishes in last place. This is not his fault. You know, he's doing what he can. Although, I don't know about sending Cam Mikolajo out for two innings or another inning, but if you can't score in extra innings, then I guess you have to rely on your top end bullpen guys. But I think he's trying to squeeze too much out of something that's not there, and they're ending up with problems. So, yeah, at the lower end, the Oryx teams, the Eagles teams, they're amidst struggle right now, and I don't know that that's going to get better.
Well, I liked what he, you know, I love the expression, you know, I guess two things. One, Oryx has no bright spots, which was really harsh. And then I thought his other, his other friends, his bright, their bright spots are a little dimmer. Well, of course, one of the bright spots they've always got is Chihiro Kaneko. And he's not quite the pitcher we know, but, you know, he's still got the tools. He's not always have them in his hand, but he's got them. Ryoichi Adachi coming back is such a huge thing for them. I mean, I watched him make this play yesterday, and I thought...
The double play?
Yes. Oh, yeah. What a play. I mean, it was the best play I've seen this week, so I got to give him some kudos. What a player.
Yeah, he catches this pop fly basically in short left near the foul line, yeah. And then doubles off the runner. I think that was Akira Nakamura. He doubled off of first base, and he's like, dude, you're not catching this ball, are you? And he's trying to get back, and he knows he has no chance. Right. So, yeah, it was just kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got bright spots, but, yeah, just like you said, a little bit dimmer than the others. So, I do see the Bay Stars making a push, and they did win their series, I think, with the Tigers this weekend. Mm-hmm. Sort of. I guess in my mind, they won it because they tied – The game was a tie today. Oh. But that's like a win because they scored two in the ninth to come back and even things up. So they actually went 1-1-1 in the series. But to me, that's a win for the Bay Stars.
I guess one of the things I have to mention is the lack of love for Kimiyasu Kudo was fairly noticeable. Now, I certainly agree with Patrick. You know, you've got to almost want to kick somebody in the head who thinks Kenta Imamiya should be at the top of the order. This is a guy who's actually has the worst OPS. He has the worst career OPS and the worst in-season OPS in the Hawks lineup on a daily basis. And the plan is, hey, this guy's no good. Let's bat him second. And, you know, sorry about that, Jason Koskrew, but, you know, he's super Mia in its attitude. It's not results.
Well, it's with the glove.
Well, he is that, certainly. Yeah. So now, he has this fascination for putting his team's worst hitter in the number two spot and asking him to bunt. But the opposite side of that is that, you know, when you have, and this is the thing I think a lot of people do miss, is that when you have the better hitters now, you know, in the seventh and eighth spot, you get a lot more production out of the middle of the, you know, you get more production, you know, at that end of the lineup. And it's sort of like, yes, you lose the outs, you know, you make the outs at the top, but you make fewer outs at the bottom. So it's sort of like, is it costly? Yes. How costly? Very little. Hmm. It's a case of like, you take 10 steps backwards, but you take 9 steps forward. So, you know, it's not a huge loss. So now the question here, and now the thing is, John alluded to the fact that basically I could manage the Hawks. Anybody could manage them. He didn't use my name, but he's saying, well, anybody could manage the Hawks. And I'm going to tell you, now his team, there's a fairly simple formula for, expected wins. Uh-huh. And the Hawks last year were projected to win 74 games. Mm-hmm. And they won 90, and that's not, you know, and that's, they could have won more if they had wanted to.
I think the projections were off.
No, I'm just saying this works for everybody.
Yeah, right.
This isn't a projection that essentially works for everybody except the Giants because they're a little different kettle of fish. But basically, no, this is a 500 projection. The teams basically are going to, as a rule, they're going to be more or less equivalent with that. You may not like the projection, but, you know, this is based on part of their record from last year, part of their record from the year before in a 500 team, but they just shot past that like nobody's business. Now, you may not like it, but first year managers don't usually improve their teams. And instead, the Hawks had the 12th best, record against their projection in NPB history.
Hmm.
Now, I think he made a huge contribution. Now, I don't think his contribution had anything to do with the bunting.
Okay.
But I think it did have to do with the team's fitness and the way he used the bullpen. And I think you have to give him credit for the team being healthier than it has been in 4 years. So Yeah, I mean, he deserves some of that credit. I mean, you weren't going to give it to him. Oh, it's the players who weren't healthy before were all healthy the last year. Okay, he had nothing to do with that. All the guys who had underperformed before didn't underperform under Kudo. Okay, well, he had nothing to do with that. So, okay, if you buy that, that's fine.
I don't know where you're getting all this. I didn't say that. Well, I just said he couldn't mess up a lineup construction is all I said. I didn't discount anything he has been doing for the past two seasons.
I think he can
I think you're stuffing words in
my
mouth.
No, basically you said
there.
That he couldn't, that anybody could win with the Hawks, and so therefore there was nothing Kudo could do that would basically convince you he was a good manager.
I might have said that in the past.
Right.
And I'm not sure that was a statement at the time.
Right.
That might not be the statement that
But again,
covers.
When you're talking to Patrick, you're saying basically, who could not win, you know, who could not have the best team with the Hawks? What manager? I'm telling you, there are people who could screw it up.
I think I was just talking about the lineup construction. I didn't think I.
Well, you can't screw up the lineup. I mean, I think he would be better if he didn't bunt as much. But again, that's what he does, and you know, he is who he is. Speaking of, since we talked about this last week about the bunts and the Tigers bunts, I did count the number of bunts by position players prior to the seventh inning in NPB this year.
Oh, okay. What do
you Okay, got? The team with the fewest is, what a shock, Hanshin Tigers. They now have two.
They have two.
And we have basically three teams that have decided they're not going to bunt. They're going to do major league style. They are the Tigers with two, the Swallows with three, and the Carp with four.
Wow.
It's hard to see. Think of Ogata as being one of those progressive guys, but there he is. And I asked Braden Higgins about that. He said, look, the way we're hitting the ball, who wants to bunt? Okay, good enough. The Bay Stars are nine. Excuse me, the Dragons are nine. The Bay Stars are six. So the Bay Stars are sort of in between. The Giants are 11. What a shock. The ultra-orthodox team. In the Pacific League, we've got three teams that love the bunt.
Hmm.
They are the Hawks, 23.
23?
The Fighters, 24. The Eagles, 21, because he wants to use their speed. I guess if you don't have power but you do have speed, the bunt almost kind of makes sense. The Lions, 19. The Buffaloes, 18. And here's the contrast, and it's sort of like, this is why I'm going to be rooting for Lotte. 12. They're the outliers in the Pacific League. So they're the team that says, like, why throw the out? Why give them an out? So we pull in for Mr. Sabermetrically Inclined Stomo Ito.
Huh. Sabermetrically Inclined.
Okay.
Well, with all the walks they're drawing, I don't think they need to bother bunting, but they're doing a good job. All right, well, yeah, these are good numbers. I'm glad you brought that up and gave us some new information or some more information about the bunting, because I just think in general, and maybe you can look it up later for a future show, but it just seems like run scoring is up. Now, maybe that's the poor pitching that we're seeing, or mediocre pitching is not necessarily poor, or maybe it's just a defensive thing or whatever, but I think
it's all the fat pitches to Tomoyuki Sugano.
Yeah, single-handedly.
But actually, I'll be honest, all the pitchers in NPB are batting, are doing better at the plate, and I'm discounting Shohei Ohtani. I mean, the pitchers who are batting as pitchers are doing better than they have been in a couple of years. So it's been a good year for the pitchers swinging the bat.
Okay. All right, making a four-seam transition, I want to talk about Rick VandenHerck and his record. So Tuesday at Yahoo Dome, Rick VandenHerck beat the Lotte Marines 2-1, and that broke a tie he had with Tsuneo Horiuchi, who set the record with 13 consecutive wins to start his rookie season in 1966. So Rick VandenHerck won his 14th. It's also the longest streak by any foreign pitcher, and he broke a tie with Cebu's
Kuo Tai-Yuan, who is also known in Japan for the Cebu Lions as Kaku Taigen.
Okay, Kaku Taigen.
The Orient Express.
Yeah, I remember him. And he won 13 consecutive over some stretch during his career, but not from his debut.
Right.
And it's a great accomplishment, and Rick thank all the teammates and everybody to do with the everybody involved with the organization. Mm-hmm. Seemed like he thanked everyone from his wife to his dog.
I didn't hear the part about the dog. He mentioned his team back home, but Rick is—he's a really down to. Again, we're not close personal friends. He seems like a down to earth guy, and he's just been. His control has been good. He has a very a simple approach to the game, you know, which is throw strikes and you know and execute his pitches. You know, when he wants to go out of the zone, he, you know, his location has been very good, very consistent. And right now his actual record in Japan is, of course, 19-1.
Yeah, because, what he lost in a postseason game?
No, well, actually, well, okay, here's the thing, not counting that we're counting actually league games. If we encountered the postseason, I think he had 2 wins last year. So, he would be, in fact, 21-1. No, he went 5-1 in the Western League.
In the Western League. Oh, okay. All right. So I thought, yeah, he thanked all these people and it sounded really good. And of course I know he's sincere. I mean, you can't win unless a pitcher strikes out everybody and the catcher's got to even hold on to all the strikes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way you can do this thing by yourself. So it's true, but, it was May 3rd at Sapporo Dome when he fell behind the Fighters 4-0. Mm-hmm. And he just seemed to be all over the place. Mm-hmm. He wasn't able to control his stuff in the strike zone. Mm-hmm. And when he did, the ball was getting whacked and he was down 4-0 and the Hawks somehow battled back. It looked like they just had nothing going offensively and they battled back and they tied the score and then with runs in the, I think they had three runs in the eighth and a run in the ninth and then scored a run in the tenth to win the game. But they got him off the hook for that loss. Mm-hmm. And that was big in him helping him get to that record. So
yeah, actually, and on the Hero interview, they said, yeah, we were all talking in the dugout. You know, we can't give up on his record, so we want to win it. So you know, he doesn't take the loss.
Right, and then even on this day when he breaks the record, he's basically in a pitching duel with Ayumu Ishikawa. Mm-hmm. of the Marines and Ishikawa is really dealing. It was just a great game. It was a really, really fun game to watch. And you know, you find yourself rooting for the foreign guy. You want him to do well. And I always think, you know, when you do well here, even if you're a little bit over 30, you can still go back to the States and pitch. And he's getting the streak together, you know, approaching a really good, you know, if you get near 20, I think that's a really good number to at least get some looks to go back home. So that might be on the table for him or on the horizon if he keeps doing this.
Yeah, if that's where he wants to go.
Okay. All right. Some notes. We've had a lot of collision confusion and non-collision confusion and tagging problems. And this play at the plate thing is just becoming, it's becoming an NPB problem. Mm-hmm. This past week, there was a play involving Seiji Kobayashi of the Giants and Fumihito Haraguchi of the Tigers. This was Tuesday, and at first, Kobayashi was ruled out. He was out by 5 or 10 feet on a play, and the umpires went and reviewed, and then they decided, okay, well, the Haraguchi, the catcher, was standing over the plate and
blocking and obstructing the baseline from the start, they said, from the very start.
And so that compelled first-year Hanshin skipper Tomoaki Kanemoto to go out and bump the umpire, which you can do with impunity, mind you, here.
That's not true. That's not true, but it's not the major. It's not the major leagues now, but you can give him a little love bump.
Well, I said bump.
Yeah, you can give him a little love bump.
So the Tigers decided to send an opinion. I guess it's a written opinion or a statement about, I guess it's similar to what judges might do in some court decisions, write their opinions. Okay.
I guess.
They sent that to the league because I don't think people really know what to do, where to stand, how to be, how to block, how to not block, where to catch the ball. This is becoming an issue.
Oh, well, Giants manager Yoshinobu Takahashi says he knows. All of our players know. They told us the rules. Okay. He said on Saturday, no, they told us the rules. We don't need to change it. We understand. It's very clear. And he said that, and I'm thinking he don't know what he's talking about. Now, because, okay, here's the thing, and I mentioned this with Seiji Kobayashi, who was the runner and is a catcher himself. And okay, the rule is one thing. The rule says you have to leave the base path open. And they've interpreted, okay, so that's one thing. That's the rule. You have to leave the base path open whether you've got the ball or not. Okay, period. Blocking the plate with your shin guard and sealing it off as catchers would do. Okay, so those are basically the two rules, and the runner's not allowed to run into the catcher. Okay, fine. Now, the two other things. The umpires have decided that the baseline is the base path and no others. No other part is the base path. Just that baseline and home plate and the airspace above said baseline and home plate. So in the case where the Tigers catcher was straddling the plate and the runner had a clear shot at the base, I mean, it was 17 inches. It was wide open. And they said, no, you were in his way. Okay, fine. Next part is that the NPB instructions to the teams, according to the Tigers and according to NPB, because they went out and they talked to him on Friday at Yokohama Stadium, was the rule is not to be enforced if the catcher clearly has the ball in plenty of time to tag out the runner. Okay.
Yes.
Now, here's
another ill-defined statement.
And then the NPB, plenty of time. The NPB people said, but there's a lot of debate about what that actually means. And every umpire interprets it differently. And NPB source told one reporter, I put it on the web, that our umpires who looked at the video were essentially divided on whether the catcher had the ball in plenty of time so that the rule needn't be enforced. So, and Mr. Kinefuchi, who's the Central League Administrator, and a really nice fellow, said, this is something we're going to have to study.
Yeah, and I think I said that at the beginning of the year, that I didn't really think the U.S., the major leagues, had this whole situation down pat, or the review situation wasn't perfect, and I don't think they were used to it. It was the first year, and I think they're going to have the same growing pains in Japan, except that they added that addendum essentially to this rule saying that you can't block you have to avoid collisions.
Well, that you can't be in the baseline at all, whether you have the ball or not, which is, you know.
And I like what you said. Well, I like what you said at the beginning before we started taping, which was you have this ill-defined verbiage of baseline base path, which, you know, no one says, well, where's the base path? Because you've got the dirt area, you've got the chalk line, and you've got the grass. Well, where exactly is the baseline? The baseline is probably wherever the umpire determines it on that particular play, on that particular day.
Well, that's the thing, is that basically, you know, if you watch the Tigers game, you can see where the base path is. It runs straight between catcher Haraguchi's legs. And to me, that's a base path. It's open. Come on in, baby. I'm going to tag you out. That's what baseball's about. You got the ball, tag the guy out. It's none of this, wait, you know, call the rules. You know, where's my lawyer? I deserve a retrial, which is what they're getting now. We're getting legalese. Right. So we don't need that stuff.
No, we don't need it. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from Dragon Soul, and he's the guy who blogs about the Dragons, so obviously he's a friend of mine. In Seoul. In spirit, I should say.
He's in Korea?
Huh? No, Dragon Soul, he's in Nagoya.
Oh, you said he was blogging a friend. He was a friend of yours in Seoul. Okay.
Okay,
I took you literally at your word, Mr. Gibson, for the first time in my life.
Oh, you'll never do that again.
I know, I learned my lesson.
All right, here's a question for your next podcast, he writes. What is the win percentage for the Dragons when Doada successfully flips?
I don't have Doala in my database, sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to do this, but I think I've said this on the show years and years ago, because when I was living there and they actually asked the public, because there was another, I guess you would call it a mascot. I don't know what it was.
That dragon-looking thing?
Something called Shaodong.
Yeah, it looks like a dragon. It's kind of a pudgy
dragon. It looks like a mouse that got way too close to some overactive nuclear plant. But anyway. I call Doada Doaho, which is a word for, I guess, would be translated to idiot or something. I don't know. I don't think Doaho, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so used to calling him that I can't stop. I don't think Doaho has a glove. He doesn't have a bat, and he never, ever has mattered in a Dragons game in the history of Nagoya Dome. So, I guess his winning percentage when the when he successfully flips is whatever it is, because he doesn't matter.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. The next one is from Carl. He says, you guys have alluded several times to troubles the org's front office has.
Several is kind of a fairly minimal number there. I think infinite times.
You make them sound as bad as the LDP at times.
Hashtag high heat.
Are there problem factions left over from the Kintetsu Buffalo Waves merger? What's the problem here? Could this be a good time to bring in a Gaijin or foreign manager? Tuffy Rhodes, perhaps? As I recall, Tuffy's Japanese language skills were way above average for a foreign ball player. What do you think? And he signed his letter, Tomei Ningen, which is the the nickname I use for Mr. Daiki Tomei, the pitcher.
Which means?
Tomei Ningen means, well, Tomei means invisible and Ningen means person.
Okay. So
basically invisible man. Okay. All right. So I'm glad to see my nicknames catch on here. I'm really thrilled about that.
I bet you would.
Jim.
Well, you know, I think, yeah, Tuffy Rhodes could make actually make an impact in the Oryx front office if he had immunity from prosecution and he went in with a bat and beat most of those guys' heads in.
Oh no.
I'm joking, of course. I don't think a foreign manager is in the works unless it's part of one of the front office guys' power play to get rid of his rival.
Mm.
Now, I heard recently that, I've seen this, you know, basically the main theme is the top two guys ahead of the Oryx front office, basically are spending all their energy trying to get rid of the other guy, and that one of their, subordinates basically, opened up his responsibility by cutting the throat of his colleague in, you know, and sort of like sabotaging his career. So apparently that's, the Oryx Buffaloes are sort of an advancement by assassination. They're like, I don't know what, I don't want to make an allusion that nobody will get, but it's pretty Machiavellian.
Okay. All right. So when I was out last week, talking to Brad, I talked to the beat writer who was covering the Carp because I was asking about, Daichi Osera at the time. And he said, well, you know, I don't know much about this team. I was covering the Oryx Buffaloes most of the time up until last year. And I said, oh, the Buffaloes. So I asked him point blank. I said, oh, are there any people left in that front office who have anything to do with the Kintetsu team? And he said, high up? No, not at all. Not at all. They're all gone. So there's no worry there. There's no factions and all that kind of LDP kind of relationship stuff and dynamic going on.
Yeah, most of the Buffaloes guys went to Rock Tent.
Okay. So. Yeah. And players as well.
True.
So I don't think that's a problem, but what he said was for the past 3 years, they were very public about moving toward a rebuild situation and that they plan to use young players and get them experience. But then all of a sudden they went out and got a bunch of veteran free agents like Tony Blanco and Hiroyuki Nakajima, Brian Bullington and Eiichi Koyano, and basically had redundancy on the roster of guys who could play the same position, but basically weren't standout players. They were just, you know, fill-ins. So that they were sending a mixed message. And then I asked him about Taguchi, who is the farm skipper. And is he really being groomed to take over the reins? And he was kind of iffy on that. He said he's not sure. It's probably the plan, but since they have been opaque and sometimes vague and unclear in their the plans that they've made public, he's just not sure that they can believe that that's the plan. So yes, it looks like the plan from the outside, but we don't know what the plan is. That's what we've complained about on the show. Jim and I have said, well, we look at what they put on the field and they look at how they construct the roster, and then the words coming out of their mouths don't seem to match, and it just looks like there's confusion.
Well, certainly, I mean, I'm a big fan of So Taguchi's, but I think with a 353 winning percentage in the Western League, he's not the first and last place. He's not the first person I'd look to promote to be the manager.
Right. And, you know, I think there is a little bit of pressure, even though it's not directly related, but on Alex Ramirez to do well as a foreign manager, because that just might be an excuse or seem to be an excuse for other teams to not employ one. It might not be, it might not have anything to do with anything, but it could be if he loses miserably. If he fails miserably, yes. If he just does okay, I think that won't carry over.
Okay.
All right, we have one more question, but we're going to hold it for next week because we are going over time, and the producer is making an appearance here.
Okay.
Telling me, just pointing at the watch here.
That's right.
All right, so anyone who has a question for next week's show, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat, at JBW Podcast, or you can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. And look for us on iTunes. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening, and talk to you next week.